One. What's up, everybody? This is another episode of the JTS podcast. My name is Marcus Modi, alongside my partners Patton Cook and Gabe Jones here, and we're gonna start this off like we've been doing the past ones, talking about COVID-19, but it is striking a little bit hard once again within sports. Hopefully everybody's playing it safe, as we are still in three separate locations as of right now. But like I said, it's been striking hard. First off, we're going to start here locally in Clarksville. Austin Peay men's basketball team, they had to pause their basketball activities this past week. And it seems like their head coach, Matt Figger, tested positive for the coronavirus as well. So they had games that were scheduled Thursday and Saturday. They got pushed back into February, I think, to be corrected. So they're supposed to play UT Martin at SEMO, and they're going to play those games February 8th and 16th. So, like I said, we got to play it safe. I wanted to get you guys' take on that. And, like, this is one thing we talked about earlier on in the year, that, hey, this is an amateur sport, so you're not really just getting paid for these games and these postponements. It's going to get really bunched up for college basketball.
Yeah, this is a tough situation for Austin Peay, because unlike some of the kind of major Power 5 schools, I'd imagine, I don't know this for sure, but I can't imagine they're testing every single day. I just, the costs alone, I think, would be a little too heavy for that. So they're probably testing three or four times a week. And that kind of leaves kind of some openings there for if a person were to test positive, they don't know it until two or three days later after they start giving off symptoms, and possible even not giving off symptoms, but you can still pass it on with the asymptomatic cases. So that kind of just offers some struggles. And right now, Austin Peay is not the only team kind of in the state of Tennessee, as well as Vanderbilt. They're having some games canceled against Tennessee this week. They had two games scheduled. Both of them look to be off from the looks of it right now, but it's nothing new. It's kind of the same sort of thing. The NBA and their bubble is really the only thing that proved viable, that there won't be any positive tests. But when you've got guys out in the open world, they're not. You don't even have to be reckless to get this horrible disease. So, I mean, it's no fault to anyone else, but it's kind of inevitable, and you just hope that they can kind of keep it as limited as they can and hope for not another outbreak. But this kind of in the world of sports, more of the same, and just crazy to think about.
Indeed, you hit the nail right on the head, Patton. Honestly, it's kind of not really anything you can do, being that people have to live their life in a certain way. I mean, not saying that you go out and start licking doorknobs and things, but of course, you're just trying to live. You have on a mask. You're trying to stay in quarantine as much as you can, but I mean, these things happen. The only thing that you can do, you find out that it's a positive test or something, but these people in quarantine, maybe postpone the game. If you can't postpone the game, have those players sit out, which would be unfortunate for the fans. But, I mean, it is what it is. We're just trying to get this thing under control. And as long as everybody has some sort of cooperation, maybe wait. Soon we'll get the vaccine or whatever and be done with it all.
There has been, I believe, there's two vaccines out now. But I don't know. Yeah, a lot of people don't know that you're supposed to be taking two of them. It's two shots. That's just information you gotta research up on and look up for yourself. Now, one thing is for sure, that they're not forcing anybody to take the vaccine. So if you don't want to take the vaccine, don't take the vaccine. If you do take the vaccine, make sure you get the second shot after, I think it's a couple months to be, or a couple weeks to be exact. But as like we said, college basketball got hit. Also, the NBA. I know you hit on the NBA bubble. That was the one for sure way for teams and players not to get COVID. But when you're trying to go back to this regular NBA season, travel time, got one of those flights, got the hotel rooms, there's going to be chances that you will have an opportunity to get COVID. And I know the Wizards had up to eight players test positive just the other day, Minnesota, they had staff members and then also Carl Anthony Towns testing positive for COVID. It's getting a lot harder now. And I think what people don't understand is how easily you can attract this virus. It's not because just a simple handshake. That's why the NBA, with their protocols now, guys are not even shaking hands. They can't be close to each other, talk post game. They was trying to limit even exchanges on the free throw line. At that, you know, if you're watching all the games, that's extremely common. If your teammate hit a free throw, your fist bump them. Or if you want to mess with the guy at the free throw line, like Rajon Rondo do, he'll just walk in front of him, or he'll just bend over and mess with him a little bit, untie his shoe. Just small things like that, where the NBA is like, you got to hold back off on him just because of that, the touching and contact tracing, because that's something that it's really hard right now for them, because it's so many people they interact with.
I mean, the thing is, it's airborne transmission. So just by them being on the same court together, you can spread this thing. As far as the touching and whatnot, yeah, I guess you try to limit that. But as far as like the NBA goes, especially if you're not on the court wearing a mask, which I don't really see why you would, you're going to be sweating on each other. You're going to have contact with each other. These things are going to happen. The only thing is, maybe you can mitigate these things outside. We did finally see a fine. Kyrie Irving was fined $50,000. He was pictured, I believe, at a family gathering, maskless. We've had other players speak out, like George Hill said, hey, I mean, if I can't see my family, if it's that serious, then maybe we shouldn't be playing. And maybe he's right. But, of course, we want to see the players play. The teams want to see them play because they got their money coming in. So it's a situation in which you just have to give and take and just do the best that you can.
Yeah, adversity is kind of struck for the NBA right now. And maybe you're wondering, why can't they just go back to the bubble? And Gabe and Marcus, you're kind of mentioning it. You can't. It was kind of okay if players were willing to sacrifice kind of seeing their families at least for a month or two. But this is a six-month season, and that's just unreasonable to ask for their guys to go away from their newborn kids and their wives and family overall. So this was kind of inevitable, and this is kind of the first bit of adversity is struck, and the NBA's kind of gone back, and they're kind of revamping their protocols in terms of kind of when teams are in their home market, players aren't allowed to leave their house other than the essentials, going to the grocery, the pharmacy. You can't even go out to eat. You got to get the carry out, if you will. So it's some new things they're putting into place. And for the road, I mean, it's kind of the same sort of thing. You're not allowed to do a whole lot. And that's one of the bright spots when you listen to players on road trips going out to dinner with guys, kind of getting to know your teammates even better. And that kind of translates to the floor as well. But for the NBA, they're trying to work through some things, and you really just got to let them. It's going to be trial for error. But the one positive thing I would say for the NBA right now is there hasn't really been shown to be transmission on the floor, where when a team has it, they're not really passing it off to another team. And that's really where you start to get in some real trouble. And the NFL's kind of seen the same sort of thing. So that's been the one positive light, if you can take anything out of it, is that there hasn't been a transmission on and off the floor. It's basically just been kind of in airplanes and hotels, actually, and in locker rooms. That's where the transmissions has happened. And when you got guys like George Hill, they're frustrated and they want to present their opinion. And I think he's exactly right to do so. And he puts forth some good points as well.
I wanted to get you guys' take on it, George Hill, the comment, because for the listeners who might not know, George Hill, he was saying that, yo, if I want to go see my family, why is there restrictions? Specifically, because a lot of these protocols are not for the home. Like, they already have set protocols for when you have a home game and whatnot. Like Patton said, you can go to the essentials. That there's restaurants that the NBA approved of as well, like you can go to order food and whatnot. But they got a little bit more stricter on the road games for instance. And Grant Hill, not Grant Hill, but George Hill, excuse me, was saying that, hey, I'm a grown man. If I want to go see family, I should be able to. And if not, if it's that serious, we shouldn't have a season. I wanted to get you guys' take on it because I can see both sides, but something that just doesn't sit right with me with their comment.
I agree. If it is that serious, then maybe we shouldn't have a season. But at the same time, some people, you have to make sacrifice in a way, and this is your job. If you're willing to lay your job down and maybe not retire, but like sit out for the season, like for example, the Patriots, we had a ton of people sit out this season that opted out to not play. If that's what you want to do, then that's fine. If you don't want to follow the rules and guidelines, then that's fine. You can also sit out. So if that's your prerogative, do that. But I get your sentiment, Mr. Hill.
Yeah, I do kind of feel the same way as Gabe. At some point, you got to keep living your life, but at another, you got to make sacrifices. And everyone in America has made sacrifices. And not seeing grandparents for months, like myself, you're trying to limit contact. And I think it's tough for George and it's tough for everyone in the NBA trying to make sacrifices. But I also get what the NBA is doing. They can't just stand by and do nothing because right now we're starting to see it kind of fall apart with teams like the Washington Wizards. They haven't played in over 2 weeks, I don't think, just because of their positive tests. So it's been an issue and a struggle for both sides. But for George Hill, he kind of had some problems with the bubble as well, if I recall back in the summer. So he's the guy who's not afraid to speak up, and he spoke his mind, and I think he's right to do so. But for the NBA, I get where they're coming from. For George, I get where he's coming from. So it's a tough situation, not a pretty situation for either side, but one that I kind of tend to fall on the NBA just slightly because everyone in the world's making sacrifices, and I think the NBA players are trying to do their part as well.
Because what with me on that comment is that the NBA said they came out and was like, if you want to sit out, you have the opportunity to sit out. That's the thing. Just like how the NFL was. But you wasn't going to get those regular game checks. You was going to have to come out. You was going to sit out. You're going to get a minimal. It was going to be a nice discount from your regularly scheduled two checks a month. But you decided to play. Now, we understand that you want to go see family and whatnot. You can't buy all those tickets like you used to when you go into certain cities when on a road trip. You got to limit those. And then also, you got to think, that's a lot of variables if not only just you, but just say half of the team, half of your teammates, and then the other team, half of their team goes out to see their families. So that's a lot of variables coming into the place to where they, and a lot of times it's asymptomatic. So you don't know. So it's a really big risk. And you got to make sacrifices. And also, yes, the NBA knows it's a big deal, but you got to remember about those TV rights and the CBA deal, because you know, with those TV rights and the CBA deal, that's where you make your money. That's where you get your checks from. You don't really get it from the owners. That's where you get your dollars from, those TV rights. And if there's no season, that new deal was not going to happen. So that's why they went to the bubble. They was trying to make do because they lost millions upon millions of dollars. Just realize that it's still, 30 million people unemployed right now? You got to be thankful that you have a job to where you can get $100,000 checks. Some people can't even get $400 a week. That's just my take on what George Hill was saying. But I understand where you're coming from, but everybody got to make sacrifices. It's 2021 now. We're going on into the new year, but we're still in a pandemic. You got to continue to make sacrifices.
And one more thing for me, I think, I don't know if the NBA has done this or not, but I would try and get the opinions and the kind of comments put together from players to try and put together the best solid plan. I don't know if they kind of interacted with the players to try and get their point of view on this, but ultimately the league is looking out for the best interest of the players, because I'm sure there's a lot of especially the young guys, they're living check to check right now. And if they're not having those game checks coming in, that's where you're starting to get in trouble. So the league's doing their best. If they don't do anything, it's a bad look for them. But it's also that the league's going to get slandered from players anyway. So it's a tough situation for both sides. But the hope is that they can kind of just piece together a season and ultimately get to June or July. But really, they've only given out half the schedule. So what that is one thing the NBA has done is they've given themselves some cushion to kind of finish games to the All-Star break, and then they'll kind of see where they are come the All-Star break and try to put together the second half of the season.
I'm just interested to see how stern Silver can be.
That was
no comment. No comment on that.
If you have to just, if you didn't understand that analogy, you just have to look deeper into it. We'll just say do your research on that.
Yeah.
But let's go ahead and continue on. We're gonna stay in the NBA. Let's go ahead and talk about this Harden trade. So, plus size Harden, as some people would say, he got a little meat on his belly.
A hefty lefty,
James Harden gets the trade that he wants, and he gets traded to the Brooklyn Nets. And this is the first blockbuster trade of this season. So Harden goes to Brooklyn. Brooklyn sends 4 first-round picks to Houston, and also Patton's team, the Cavs, and the Pacers join in on that blockbuster deal, as well as the Cavs received Jared Allen for a second round pick, if I'm correct.
Yep.
Second round pick for given to Houston. And then also the Pacers send Victor Oladipo to Houston, as Brooklyn sends Caris LeVert to the Indiana Pacers. Now, guys, I want to ask, who did you guys think won this trade?
Everybody wins. Woo! It's sweepstakes, baby. I mean, Brooklyn ultimately will lose if they don't win a championship. But otherwise, I think everybody wins. Oladipo gets to go to a team in Houston where he maybe can fit in with John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins. They get something going there. They're happy. They also get picks. The Cavs, they get another big man so they can ship off the other slew of big men that they have, as well as Torian Prince. They got him in the trade as well. And then for Caris LeVert, he doesn't have to play behind 2 other all-star. Well, some of the greatest players of all time, Kyrie Irving, one of the greatest ball handlers, finishers of all time. But Kevin Durant, he doesn't have to play behind those guys. Maybe he can show and shine and do his thing in Indiana. So I think everybody wins. As far as the Nets, if you don't win a championship, it is a bust. But I think this is one of the greatest trios as far as just strictly talent, 3 players in the vacuum, that has ever been assembled in NBA history.
Yeah, totally agree with you there. I think in terms of talent, Chris Bosh isn't James Harden, if you will, or Kyrie Irving. So in terms of talent, it's all there. I'm with Gabe. I don't think any team lost in this trade for Indiana. They were never going to get Victor Oladipo to stay. I saw reports on Twitter yesterday that they offered a 4-year deal, $25 million a year, and Victor turned it down. So from what it looked like, Oladipo wasn't going to stay in Indiana, so they get a guy in Caris LeVert, a young up-and-coming star, and it's got a chance to be maybe a superstar, the development path he's on right now. So a good trade for them. For Houston, they got out the cancer and James Harden, who's really starting to rip apart that team. And you just saw it from the comments from DeMarcus Cousins. He was elated to get him out of the locker room. And then for Brooklyn, and I'll talk about my team last. For Brooklyn, I think there's really just a backup kind of insurance policy if Kyrie Irving doesn't end up being the guy they want him to be. Because I think in best case scenario, all 3 of them play. But I think Kyrie's going to go off the deep end again. We've seen it too many times. I tried to give him the benefit of the doubt this season. Maybe he changed. Maybe he saw this opportunity with Kevin Durant, and maybe he changed his ways a little bit. He has done the complete opposite of that. I think he's done in worse than any situation he's done. He didn't just straight up and leave the Cavs and the Celtics without any notice.
We was about to talk about Kyrie in a moment.
He's in the trade detail. Well, I mean, we'll keep going, but for James Harden, I think this is going to be interesting for him. He gets his much needed move. This was the destination for him. It looked like Philly was an option, and he'd rather go to his buddy in Kevin Durant. So he's gotten his star. We'll see how it works out. I think right now Kevin Durant's going to be happy to see his former OKC buddy here in Brooklyn, and that'll be a fun team. But like Gabe said, championship or bust. And then for my Cavaliers, this is the guy in Jared Allen they're going to splash the cash on in free agency. So this is a kind of an accelerated head start for them. They kind of get to show them what their plan is right now, and it looks like he's going to be the center for the future, and it's just whether or not they can get Andre Drummond or JaVale McGee out in the trade market before the trade deadline. But like Gabe said, a good move all around, and I kind of spoiled the Kyrie conversation just a little bit, but for Brooklyn, this was needed because you just don't know what you're going to get from a guy like Kyrie Irving.
I think for me, Houston, from Houston and Brooklyn, I think Houston won the trade even more just because it's a lot more chemistry can be involved now with John Wall, Victor Oladipo, and Boogie. All three guys got something to prove. You got a new head coach in Steven Silas who will institute Victor. Victor is not a ball dominant player. So both of those guys, him and John Wall, can go hand to hand. And then you got a big man. They had Sabonis in Indiana, who's looking like an all-star right now, coming around. Now you got Boogie Cousins trying to prove another point that he deserves to be in this league. So I think Houston has a really good shot of bouncing back from this because it was a lot of drama, as Patton said. For the Pacers, you got a young star in the making, just plain and simple, Caris LeVert. Most improved talent, future all-star. He's just going to be coming into the gist of his development along with Sabonis and those young guys. They really have a good shot. Cavs, I guess you wanted to just to have I want to say the twin towers, but do you have more than two towers?
Oh, got a skyline.
Skyline chili over in Cleveland. Come on.
And for Brooklyn, I don't know. I'm not really sold on this because now you only have one center, and it looks like it's going to be the Houston Nets very shortly. Might be a lot of small ball. You're going to be playing Kevin Durant at the four. And when you go against these big teams, you're going to get out-rebounded. And then we might as well go and hit on Kyrie Irving because Kyrie hasn't played in, what, a week and a half almost. It didn't look good. One thing I will say, he might have knew behind the scenes that James was going to get this trade. They might have had a conversation and whatnot. That's why he might have took a little vacation. Maybe he's trying to focus on trying to get a ring now after the fact. I don't know. But it's a lot. It can be a lot of drama leading up into this season for the Nets. And if it's a bust, it can look as bad as the trades when they was getting Kevin Garnett and Paul George and Jason Terry.
Yeah, as far as Kyrie goes, one thing I will say positive in his for his side, he has been doing stuff. He's talked about, like, social justice and whatnot. I know one of the games he missed, he was in some meeting with maybe some New York politicians or whatever. So that's all fine and dandy. But at the end of the day, you do have a job to do. At the end of the day, we all have our cell phones with us. So you could shoot your coach a text. This man had no contact with the team. Nobody knew where he was. The man could have been, well, at worst, like, we don't want to say deceased, but you could have been anywhere. This man could have been partying in Mexico. We have no clue what you're doing, dude. It's easy to send a quick text. Hey, man, I'm going through some stuff. Not coming. Just easy stuff. But as far as the basketball side, like I said in the podcast, whenever we talked about it before at the beginning of the season, whenever it was speculating that this would happen, I just want to see, will it work, or I want to see it crash and burn. I'm just here for the spectacle. Who's going to play that Chris Bosh role, baby? Who's going to give up them sacrifices like Kevin Love? Who's going to be third fiddle, man? I can't wait to see it.
I don't know. It might be Kyrie. Just going because
it might be KD.
I don't anticipate that happening, sir. I'm sorry. I don't think that's going to happen.
Listen, hear me out. All right, so while they were playing already, like these first four games, who was taking more shots? Kyrie Irving. Why? Because KD don't need the ball like that. James Harden comes. Now you go from, like Chuck said, from the splash bros to the dribble bros. These guys are just going to be pounding the ball. So maybe James Harden get the first half of the shot clock, Kyrie get the second half of the shot clock, and then you dip it off to KD to net the shot. So
I don't know. Yeah, I don't like this because three of the top 10 ISO players are on the same team at the same time. Looks like it's just going to be a lot of one-on-one action. And just to let the listeners know, a lot of one-on-one action is pretty easy to defend because you're just all five defensive players just going to be looking at one guy.
Now, whenever there's Kyrie, KD, and and James Harden, good luck.
I'll say this. I don't see Kyrie Irving finishing the season with Brooklyn. I think they've had enough. I think Steve Nash has had enough. And I've had enough quite personally. I've seen it with three different teams now, and it's getting a bit old for my liking. For me, I don't see Kyrie Irving staying, and I see James Harden and Kevin Durant working because I see Kevin Durant, he sacrificed in Golden State. So I can see him sacrificing here in Brooklyn. And I liked what I think Shaq said it on Inside the NBA. Out of the three guys, only one player has sacrificed, and that has been the best player in the NBA when fully healthy, and that's Kevin Durant. So for me, I think this will end up working because I don't see Kyrie Irving finishing the season, and I don't think there's a better two-way spot in the NBA right now than James Harden and Kevin Durant when they're both playing like they can.
Yeah, we're just gonna have to find
out of the way.
Yeah, we're just gonna have to find out later on. We're gonna send it to a quick break. We'll be right back here with more Just Talking Sports.
Hey, yes, let's hop into this NFL segment. We're going to start down south. Now, we already had some movement from Houston. We saw James Harden pack his bags and head up to New York. And we just might see Deshaun Watson do similar things. He's just trying to figure out how to get his way out of Houston. So the situation is, I mean, they said that they were going to talk to him about GM and coaching hires. Well, they were like, forget you. We're just going to hire whoever we want. And now Deshaun Watson's like, hey, all right, fine. I want out of here. And I feel like his anger is justified. And honestly, I'm all for it as long as he doesn't come to my division. Unless coming to my division means he's playing in these colors, you know, the Patriots uniform. Patton, what are you thinking? Is Deshaun's anger justified? What's going on?
First off, I think the Texans need to get a lot of credit for how they screwed up this situation. They had a top 10 quarterback, a top 2 wide receiver in DeAndre Hopkins, and a top 10 defense. And here they are. They would be picking third overall, and they threw it all away for Laremy Tunsil. And it's a scene to get out of control. And for Deshaun Watson, he is a top 10 quarterback, and a lot of times these quarterbacks get a lot of say in their organization. And right now, Cal McNair and company, they've seemed to shut out their most prized asset in terms of hiring. He wanted Eric Bieniemy to get at least interviewed, and at the start, they didn't want to interview the guy. Now they've kind of gave in whenever it looks like they might lose out on their quarterback, but they seem to royally screw this, and for a Titans fan, I say keep on going because this is going to be a guy who's given us fits ever since he got drafted over to Houston. So right now he's looking at the landscape across the NFL, and he's saying, I don't know if there's too many more bad opportunities than what I'm in right now in Houston. And he's looking over and saying, maybe it's time for a fresh start, and he's getting advice from some old Texans that saying, this is more the same. So for me, I think Watson, look over at Chicago. Look at that defense. Look at Allen Robinson. I look at David Montgomery. I would look at Chicago to maybe look and get a run at him, go into the NFC with a pretty good quarterback division that they've got going over there with Aaron Rodgers right next to him. I look for Deshaun Watson to get out because he is not a happy man right now. And to Gabe's question, it is very justified.
I think it's justified as well. The thing with Houston is that they didn't have to tell him he was going to be a part of it. If you was going to leave him out of it, you could have easily left him out of it and just continued on with your search But the thing that's interesting with me is that they hired a company to give these guys a list of who they believe should be interviewed for that GM position. Houston seemed like they just saw that list, looked at it, and was like, eh, whatever. Ripped it up, threw it in the garbage, because they went after the Patriots, a former Patriot. Don't know why they Houston love just former Patriots head coaches and GMs. It don't make sense. But they went after him, and he wasn't even on the list. And everybody was looking like, "What? Why would you make that move?" And then you didn't tell Deshaun at all. They're having a conversation after the fact, and he's upset on it. And like Patton just said, he wanted Eric. You didn't want to interview Eric until what, a couple weeks after the fact that he said he's frustrated now? Come on now, it's not a good sign for Houston. And you don't want your franchise guy to want out, because then now everybody's going to see these previous bad trades that you have made and be like, okay, we can might get him for cheap. I mean, you got rid of DeAndre Hopkins for a second round pick and David Johnson. Let's see, can we get maybe just two first round picks for Deshaun Watson? Would you let that slide? But one team, I think for me, to try to get, I know Pat, he likes it that he wants him out of the AFC because he gave him a lot of problems. But I would say, if he's going to go to the NFC, if he goes to the 49ers with Kyle Shanahan, you might as well go ahead and write that down and go ahead and say that they're going to be a very good favorite to get into the Super Bowl.
Yeah, hopefully he stays just away from my team. The best trade that I've heard personally was Miami. So Miami, they can trade Tua, and they can trade back the Houston pick. They have Houston's top, I think, number three pick. So, yeah, Miami could take a run at Deshaun Watson, but I hope not. Look, either stay put. This is for my sake, all right? Yeah. Look, you don't even have to stay put. Just go somewhere else unless you just really enjoy wearing the red, white, and blue. You know where to come.
Yeah, for Miami, I think it's an interesting proposition. I think putting Deshaun Watson on that team would be interesting, but I tend to fall on the side of Marcus. I think getting a receiver like Devontae Smith, I think it'd be too hard to pass up. And why help out a team that you kind of put into shambles, getting Laremy Tunsil for that first-round pick? So I think it's a good move either way, but whatever Deshaun Watson does, if he can stay out of the AFC South so I don't have to see him two times a year, I'll be eternally grateful and I'll say my prayers for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was the blockbuster, I guess, player movement we might possibly have. And of course in the NFL, we always have coaching movement. So guys, would y'all rather start with the Falcons or would y'all rather start with the Dirty Birds, the Eagles? You know
let's
what?
Let's hit on the Falcons.
Let's smack the Falcons first. All right, past Super Bowl losers, the Falcons, they go out and hire Arthur Smith. Patton, this is your guy, yes? Talk to me about Sir Smith.
Well, Arthur Smith, he's a pretty cool story if you haven't followed him throughout the NFL. First off, he is the son of the CEO of FedEx, so he really doesn't need to do what he's doing right now. He has all the money in the world if he wants it, but he's a football guy, quote-unquote. He just loves the game, and he's worked his way up through the Titans organization. He started out with Ken Wisenhunt, oddly enough. God help me for those years that we endured for Titans fans, but he kind of just stayed on the staff throughout every single coaching change. And that really says something about Arthur Smith, because usually when you bring in a new head coach, he wants his guys, but he stayed on there the whole time. Arthur started out as an assistant, worked to the defensive side as an assistant coach, went to the tight ends coach. And then when Mike Vrabel came in, he made him his offensive coordinator after Matt LaFleur went over to Green Bay Packers. And here recently, Arthur Smith has been the resurgence of this Titans offense. Whether you want to give him all the credit or not, he is the guy that kind of unlocked the ability of Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill together, and that he made us the top five offense. And as a Titans fan, that hasn't happened really since Vince Young came to town, and even then we weren't really scoring-wise the top five offense. So Arthur deserves a lot of credit in that, the play design, the kind of play calling. He had all those duties, and he really kind of flourished, and he upped his stock to the point where he is one of the top coaching candidates, and he's moving over to the Atlanta Falcons. And I like this move. This is the first time Matt Ryan has gotten an offensive coach into the building. It's been kind of these defensive guys the whole way, and they haven't really worked for him. And Arthur Smith is kind of under this Shanahan offense, and that's where Matt Ryan had his best success. That's, of course, where they went to the Super Bowl, where, of course, Gabe, he kind of mentioned earlier, still gloating on Malcolm Butler, or not Malcolm Butler, but that 28-3 comeback. So a great win for them. But for Arthur Smith, a good job for him. He worked his way from the bottom all the way up to the top, and right now he's got some talents. It's just whether or not they will end up keeping those main guys in Matt Ryan and Julio Jones. And if I'm Arthur Smith, I'm keeping them for as long as I can.
I like the move for Arthur Smith. It was pretty funny. I like seeing that Matt Ryan was happy about that signing. But if I'm the Falcons, I'm drafting a quarterback. I'm sorry. Well, but it doesn't have to be that first one. If you have an opportunity to get Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields, I say go after those guys. But somebody like Mac Jones later on, maybe in the second round, or another name, throw out Trey Lance, North Dakota State. He was going to be the number three QB before the season started, before COVID hit and everything. But there's a chance he might play this season because, you know, the FCS is starting up very shortly. But that's another name to just throw out there. That's a draft. That's a draft guy. A lot of mock drafts have him on there on that list. But if I'm the Falcons, you have a lot of weapons. You got to give Julio Jones his touches and touchdowns. That's the one thing. Touchdowns. He gave him the man his touchdowns. Todd Gurley. You got to get him back going because he was a top five running back just a couple years ago. But you have the weapons, Calvin Ridley, Gage, Hayden Hurst, Todd Gurley. Arthur Smith has a lot of weapons at his disposal, and it's somewhat similar to the Titans, how the Titans' offense was. So I think it's a good fit for him. Now, the defense, on the other hand, is still going to be suspect, but it's the Falcons' defense. They have really just, what, two guys, Keanu Neal really is. Keanu Neal has been the Falcons' defense for how long now, it seems like. But a solid move getting Arthur Smith.
And one more thing on Arthur. I thought the red zone production, that's been a struggle for Atlanta, like you mentioned, Marcus. For the Titans, we barely kicked field goals. We always seem to get into the end zone, and that's all up to the play caller. I think play design is as much as anything in the red zone because you're trying to outthink the defense. And I think for Arthur Smith, he's done exactly that. And I'm sure Julio Jones. For Arthur, he made 1-11 work for A.J. Brown. He's looking to kind of do the same for Julio Jones, and an interesting proposition for that defense. It looks like Dean Pease is going to join the staff in some sort of fashion. Whether or not he'll be the DC or not, I'm not sure. But for a guy like Dean Pease, he's been everywhere. He helped the Titans defense, and when he left, you just saw the impact. So it'll be important that the staff hires, and that's for any head coach.
Okay, well, from a Super Bowl losing franchise to a Super Bowl winning franchise, the Philadelphia Eagles. Dougie P, he's out of here. Number one, do you think that he gets another job? And number two, what happened? I mean, they were right there. They had a little quarterback battle. But what happened? How did this thing implode so fast? Marcus, what happened?
I think, okay, for one, I think Doug Peterson is going to get another job just because, like you just said, he's a Super Bowl champion. That was just 3 years ago. That'd be pretty wild for a former champ to not get a job just 3 years later. I think it was a lot of the animosity within the organization. And I think Doug might have been a scapegoat. Because, Carson Wentz didn't play the best. You had Jalen Hurts who come in. Who played well for a rookie, but still wasn't getting wins. And the first outing was going to be Doug Peterson. Now, does Carson Wentz stay? Does Howie, the GM, trade Carson Wentz? Do you go with Jalen Hurts? That's the thing. You don't know the direction that the Eagles are going to go. They just fired Doug Peterson as that scapegoat, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think the scapegoat is a great word because Howie Roseman over there in Philly, he seems to have all the power and all the reign. And if you look at their draft classes, it's been an absolute abomination. Jalen Hurts has been their best draft pick probably in about 6 or 7 years, and they've been picking high up there. So when you look at Doug Peterson, I think he's been the odd man out, and it's a tough one for him because in terms of play calling and offense, he won a Super Bowl with a backup quarterback in Nick Foles, and that can't be stated enough for a guy winning a Super Bowl with a guy like Nick Foles and beating a guy like Tom Brady who went toe-for-toe with him that entire game. So I'm not a big fan of this move for the Eagles. I think the Eagles, they maybe think the grass is greener on the other side. I think that grass might be dead on the other side. You just don't know what you're going to get in kind of picking up some of these rookie head coaches, and that's looking like what the move is going to be. In terms of Doug Peterson, if Jason Garrett is getting head coaching interviews, I don't see why Doug Peterson's not going to get a chance in the NFL. So I look for Doug to get a chance somewhere. Maybe he uses this this first year to maybe be an offensive coordinator again, trying to regain his stock back up there, because I think it did kind of hurt him this year just with it, looking at all the injuries. That offensive line that Philly had this year, I mean, it was a D2 offensive line pretty much. I mean, you're bringing in third and fourth stringers, and I thought they were putting competent offense out there with a rookie quarterback. So for Doug Peterson, it's a tough go of it. But when you look at the situation that the Eagles are in right now, it's an absolute mess. You got Carson Wentz wanting out. You need Jalen Hurts to be ended up being that guy. And you've got some aging defensive pieces that aren't going to be there for much longer and Fletcher Cox. So we'll see what happens in that department. But I see Doug Peterson definitely getting another job. And for the Eagles, an interesting move that I don't really see the point in, but they want to make the move, so they made it.
Indeed, indeed. Well, honestly, I think that this was the best move for Doug Peterson. I think that he'll get a chance to go to a different team in which he can maybe be the only chef in the kitchen. Just rumors from the sidelines in that horrific Redskins-Eagles game. Oh, excuse me. Washington football team, Eagles game. It was some players allegedly trying to get at Doug Peterson, but I'm not sure if the decisions in that game to quote-unquote maybe throw the game, you throw in this backup quarterback in the game. I'm not sure if that was all his decision. Maybe that was the GM, because they have to go from picks. They were volleying for a draft position. So he goes to a different team. I think Doug Peterson is actually a good coach, seeing what he did with this team over this season. Good on you, Dougie. Good on you.
I also agree with that, Pat, Gabe, yeah. Real quick, because yeah. – Was that a Howie move saying to play your third string quarterback? And if it was your GM saying that, why fire him if he was the one behind the scenes? So that's why I say it doesn't make really a lot of sense. So, but go right ahead.
Yeah, they took him to the altar and sacrifice. All right. Moving on. Let's hit on some of these playoff games that we did see before we get into Buck the Lions. We'll start with this Titans-Ravens game. Now, Patton, you were in the stadium.
LaFrod Jackson.
You were talking Jackson. All this hot mess about young Lamar. Yeah, they ran all over you. Yeah, your King Henry, he only rushed for 44 yards. Talk to me. How did you feel whenever they just started tiptoeing in their Jordans all over the Titans logo?
Well, first of all, now that you guys are laughing at my demise, first I'd like to say it was great to be in a home playoff game. It's been a little while. And I just like to think of the interception that Lamar threw. I'm just going to kind of play that over in my mind because that's all I've got right now. When the Titans went up 10 to nothing, here I was thinking, I want 30 to nothing. I want to come here on this podcast and I want to reign to supreme over LaFrod Jackson. And to me, throwing the football, he's still LaFrod Jackson in my mind. What he did with his legs is what beat the Titans. And that has never been my case against Lamar. He's the best running quarterback in the NFL. And I would argue on his day, he's probably the best running back in the NFL as well. So the Ravens did it. But that defense to me is what really won them the football game. They took over the game. They played with they were pissed off for greatness in that game. They saw Derrick Henry kind of giving them the work the past few opportunities. And here today, they got their pieces back in Calais Campbell. And he wreaked havoc on that offensive line that was starting to become a bit of a problem here in the past couple of weeks. Ryan Tannehill, he might be on fraud watch. I'm going to say it. I'm starting to see a little bit out of Ryan Tannehill right now because he has yet to have a game to me. When I watch this Titans team where Derrick Henry doesn't have a good game, we need our franchise quarterback to come up here and kind of pick up the slack. And I have not seen that from Ryan. And I've been his biggest defender here on this podcast. I've been fighting tooth and nail with Marcus all year. And it looks like Marcus is starting to be on the good side of it because it seems like Tannehill needs Henry to be successful. And when Henry has that bad game, he has that 50-yard rushing game, it's been a struggle for Ryan Tannehill to make open throws, and he ultimately was the last person out on that field throwing the interception, trying to get it to Khalif Raymond when A.J. Brown was wide open streaking down this field. So a tough one for me, a tough game. I got over it within 24 hours. It wasn't as heartbreaking as I thought it was going to be, but for the Ravens, give credit to them because – I think we poked the bear a little too much in 2020, and in 2021, they kind of got the better of us and really took over the football game from the start after going down 10-0, and they ultimately got the last laugh.
I'm thankful that you have came out and said that about Ryan Tannehill because Patton knows I've been saying this for quite some time. Yeah. We can't forget about the Miami Dolphins, Ryan Tannehill. That's one thing I always say, like, if you have past film on these guys and you see that he might have a really good year one year and then the next year be questionable, if he does it again, there's a good chance it's going to go full circle. Time might circulate once again. Derrick Henry didn't have a stellar game. The Ravens defense stepped up, just plain and simple. One thing I will say, though, about the Ravens, though, Marquise Brown had 100 receiving yards. So he might say Lamar Jackson had a pretty bad game, but if he getting to his number one target and getting 100 receiving yards against that awful, god-awful Titans secondary, he had to be doing something.
Patton, I have to get your thoughts on that Titans 4-for-4. Fourth down. On the Baltimore 40, you're down 4. What are you doing? What were you thinking you were gonna punt?
No chance, because Mike Vrabel has been a guy who's been aggressive all season long, and when you needed it most, he got his pants pulled down. He got too scared. He punted the ball away, and it ended up being like a 20-yard punt. We didn't even pin him deep in their own territory. I just did not get that call. I don't know if you guys have seen these stats, but that is the first time that a team has been down in the fourth quarter at their over their own 50-yard line. That's the first time a team has ever punted in NFL history since they've been keeping these sort of stats. And Mike Vrabel, he seems to – I don't know what it is. It almost seems like a flip of a coin because on one instance he wants to be really aggressive, and then on the other he seems too scared. And ultimately, he came out and said he trusted that defense. I don't know why he trusted. I don't know why you trust this defense. You've seen it over and over all year. Granted, they're playing better in that game, but this secondary, I'd like to talk about Adoree Jackson. He's robbed us all year long. He played, I believe, 4 games on the season, and then when he's come back, he's been burnt toast the entire time. It's been an absolute disgrace from him. This secondary needs some help. This pass rush ended up being better in Baltimore. That was a weird game for me. The pass rush looked actually good in the game, but a weird one, a game that I'm going to forget about and I'm going to completely wipe from my memory. I've already forgot about it, so don't ask me about it anymore.
All right, let's get right into the game that we did not see coming. The Browns versus the Steelers. Guys, 2 minutes into the second quarter, four turnovers for the Steelers. What did you think? Did you think after that botch snap, it's the first play of the game, after a botch snap, did you think, oh, okay, maybe this is just an anomaly. These guys didn't play the last week. They just were out of sync. But then just more turnover, 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 score, score, score. Did you see this happening? Marcus, how did this happen?
I think it's just that was the icing on the cake for the Steelers season. You start off 11-0, then what, you lose four out of your last five. You think you got everything under control when in the second half of the season it really wasn't that. Then you come, got guys saying the Browns is just the Browns, and you get smacked right in your mouth, and now you're pouting after the fact, saying you're just hoping that the Chiefs beat these guys. It wasn't a good sign at all. I actually was trying to warn Steelers fans ahead of time that this would happen, so I'm not surprised.
Yeah, a weird game. After the snap, you kind of just felt that something weird was about to happen, because that never happens for Marquise Pouncey. He's one of the best centers in the game, and he thought Big Ben was 8 feet tall. That was nowhere near him, and it sailed into the end zone, ultimately giving the Browns touchdown. But give credit to Cleveland. They didn't stop there. They forced some of these turnovers as well. It wasn't just the Steelers unraveling it. A lot of pressure was put on them by Cleveland, and they kept their foot on the gas the entire game. And Nick Chubb ultimately running riot. You had Baker Mayfield connecting consistently. They just never did get to Baker the entire game. And ultimately the best win in Cleveland Browns history. And I don't think since Jim Brown, probably. So good one for Cleveland. For the Steelers, you can't say you didn't see this happening, because they've been inconsistent all year long. Even when they are 11-0, there are games they definitely should have dropped. People like the Steelers, and that Titans game was really close as well. But for the Steelers, this looks to be the end of the Big Ben era. Although I think I saw a number, Big Ben counts $47 million against the cap next season. He's just staying. An absolute absurd number.
He's staying. He's going to get that money. Pouncey, I think, is going to leave. But I think Big Ben going to cash in on that last final check.
All right. Well, maybe the end of Big Ben, and maybe the end for you guys, because just know it's time to book the lines. All right. Let's get right into it. First game. Well, before we get into the first game, we're going to hit these scores. So just so y'all know, listeners, I was down big. All right. I was down about 10 points to Patton, who was in second place. Current scoring in the last week, how it went. Young Marcus, he scored 6. Patton scored 4. It's playoff time, so it's double points. Bam, 12 points for young Gabriel Jones. I'm good back grief. In it, baby. The current score is Marcus 55, and me and Patton tied at 49. All right, but let's get right into it. Don't slip up again, guys. Don't slip. All right, Rams, Packers. Marcus, since you're in the league, we'll let you get the first swing at it. What you thinking?
All right, this is going to be a really all of these matchups, I believe, is really interesting, because this Rams defense stifled Seattle. And I want to love to see how this zone coverage of the Rams defense, and you're supposed to have Aaron Donald back, even though he had, bruised ribs, and then you got Floyd on the other side attacking Aaron Rodgers. And I want to see the secondary, how they go up against Devontae Adams, who's been one of the best receivers in the game. And then Robert Tonyan is another guy at the tight end spot who has been a sleeper, but a monster as well. You can't forget about Aaron Jones as well.
Yeah, I like the Packers in this one. I don't see this beat up LA Rams team, although Aaron Donald will play. Cooper Kupp will not be playing. That just came out via Ian Rappaport. He's out today. I just don't see him scoring enough points. And for Aaron Rodgers, he's got all the pressure in the world right now, because this is the year. This is the year he has the defense He has weapons on the outside, and he's got a top 10 running back in Aaron Jones. I see them taking quick business of LA. I think that win they had against Seattle was their season. I don't see Jalen Ramsey being able to keep up with the best receiver in football right now in Davante Adams. I like Green Bay.
All right, and I too like Green Bay just off the strength of the Rams don't have a quarterback. They do have Cam Akers. Green Bay's run defense isn't great, but I'm sorry, you can't score points without a quarterback. So I'm going with the Packers, and I'm going to take the Packers by six. Marcus, who you got Packers by?
Yes, I'm going to go Packers by seven.
All right, and
Packers by 10, yeah.
By 10. Okay, Ravens, Bills. Patton, just to rub some of that sting in, the Ravens tearing up the Titans. Do you think they'll be able to repeat their performance against the Bills?
I think they got a great shot today. No snow in Buffalo. Lamar Jackson never played in snow, but looks like the forecast is going to hold off just a little bit. But the defense that the Ravens have right now, they can beat anybody. And when you got Lamar Jackson, if he can stay turnover free in this game, I think they've got a shot. But ultimately, I see Buffalo. They've got fans in that stadium right now. They're dying to make it to the AFC Championship game. I'm going to go with Buffalo in this one, but it's going to be close. I'm going to go Buffalo by three.
This one here is another tough one because I want to see how the Ravens defense, they're the number one team in the NFL in man coverage. But everybody who's been watching the Bills know that Josh Allen has been thriving against man coverage. He has one of the highest percentages off of man coverage. So I know they did a lot of cover one against the Titans. If you're going to do cover one again, just make sure that you double Stephon Diggs. Because if not, I think he's going to have a field day tonight. But I'm a go with the Bills. I think they edge it on out. I'm gonna say Bills by three as well. But whew, it might be a shootout, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I agree. It might be a shootout, but I think the best player on the field is Lamar Jackson. If you can't stop him, the Bills defense has been playing pretty decent, but I don't think that they'll be able to stop him. What's up?
That's another thing I forgot to bring out. The one time I had saw this from an athletic, the one game that the Bills was going against that read option, the triple option and all that, was against the Cardinals, and the Cardinals torched them. They had two touchdowns on the ground. I think they finished with like 175 rushing yards. So that's something you do have to watch out for the Bills defense, that Bills run defense specifically. Now the Bills passing defense, I think they'll do it. Their secondary hold up on their own, but they run defense. They got to stop Lamar.
Yeah, I'm going Ravens. Ravens by seven. I believe that'd be the upset. All right, rolling right through Browns Chiefs. Y'all think Browns can do it again? Marcus, what you thinking?
Just know that when OBJ tweeted out that don't be surprised the Browns will win this week, Patrick Mahomes liked it. And I don't like seeing an angry Patrick Mahomes. So I'm going Patty Mahomes getting it done. I'll say they try to keep it close, and I'll say by seven.
Pat?
Well, for me, I don't see the magic being able to carry over. I think Patrick Mahomes, if they do end up getting down, don't be shocked or scared. Patrick Mahomes has shown he's able to come back from behind. I see them end up coming from behind. I think the Cleveland will start out hot, but I think Patrick Mahomes will end up being too tough for this defense. They might get their star quarterback for the Browns in this one, but I just see this being too much. They've had a week off to get healthy and rested. I think Le'Veon Bell is going to have a good game in this one.
So you're going Chiefs by? No?
Say that again, sorry.
Are you going with the Chiefs?
Yeah, I said I'll go with the Chiefs, and I'm going to go with them by seven in this one.
All right, Chiefs by seven, and I will go with the Chiefs by eight. We'll see what happens. Moving on, Bucks Saints. I am a Saint non-believer in the playoffs. I don't think